Well, hello, Mr. Tim Lucas.
Hello,
thank you.
Mr.
Thank
Ollie.
You so much. Hello, hi. Firstly, thank you so much for flying out to New York on a whim that we sort of came up with in a pub. And number two, thank you for joining me in this wonderful little studio in, I was going to say Brooklyn, we're not in Brooklyn. We're in Manhattan. Thank you very much.
Canal Street.
Canal Street. Well, look, I'm going to start off in the traditional way in this podcast. It's a very simple question. You can go as far back or as relevant and recent as you like. But Tim Lucas from Hyper Island, who was the first person that made you feel like you had talent?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wonderful question. I think I've been lucky. I think I've been a lot of people that have helped me along the way. I don't know that I've got a lot of talent, but I think they've helped me to push myself, question myself, to believe in myself. If I could pick one, so I was a kid that went to university, first of the family that had been to university, had no real idea what I was doing. Ended up in California for a summer working, got to meet some graffiti artists, and turned that into my thesis. And then had a young university lecturer who was really into sort of urban anthropology. And she said to me, this is quite good. Would you want to go back? And I said, well, what do you mean go back? She said, well, if you get through your university degree, okay, I'll see if you can get funding to do a PhD.
Wow.
And at that point, obviously, I had no idea what's a PhD, what I was going to let myself in for. But she just sort of pushed me and said, you know, like, you could continue studying this. If this is something you're interested in, you know, go for it.
Mm.
And I think that, you know, when you're young, specifically, you've probably got very limited idea of the options that are available to you. So I think anyone that opens up a window,
yeah,
or a small door and kind of encourages you to look at things differently. And I guess the irony of it is that I ended up going back and studying sort of gangs and gang culture with a load of Latino kids in California. And I felt in many ways like I was exploiting them to get information, to kind of write up my thesis. And but the one thing that I maybe could offer them was a little bit of a window into, there's a world out there, you know, yeah, kind of, they had no real idea of England, of other countries, other cultures. They were very much focused on their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's one of the things that stayed with me. And if it's at all possible that you can open that window up for other people, I think it's something we have to try and do.
I never knew this about you. And actually, I guess I want to get to, I want to get to why we're here in a second. Before we do, before we kind of speak about nobody wants to work for you, what do I need to know about you then that led you to being the person that you are now? So for the context of listeners, how would I describe your job right now?
My job right now is officially what it says on the LinkedIn pages. I'm the head of Hyper Island North America, so I'm kind of responsible for everything that involves in terms of growing our business here in North America. And growing a business means we are a consultancy, business consultancy, but at the same time we have courses. And I'd say our sort of solutions ecosystem, which makes it sound grandiose.
Whoa. Wait, okay, I'm going to ask you, how would you describe what you do to your child? What do you say to those people?
I'd say to them, I'm very lucky, very fortunate. I go around the world and try and get people interested, enthused, engaged, and putting energy into transforming their lives.
Wow.
So I think Hyper Island is a lot about transformation, transforming people. I mean, companies hire us because they want to transform the organization, but you know, that only happens if you're transforming the people, and it starts with people. And I think a lot of that work is very much at an individual level.
Yeah.
Then you try and scale it within the organization, but you need to engage people. You need to give them tools, give them methodologies, give them new rituals, new ways of thinking, a new vocabulary, just to make the world of work a little bit more creative, collaborative, all these kind of new skills that we need to be working on every day. That's what clients pay us for, to come in and help them to challenge themselves, And ultimately, you know, if that's a consultancy project where we're helping them to maybe think about launching a new product, or whether that's about helping them to upskill their leadership team, we want everyone involved on that journey to feel that part of what they get out of this at the end is an element of transformation on that journey.
So for, in layman's terms, a company will come to Hyper Island.
Yeah.
I'm going to use Nike as it's a familiar brand. And they will say, we have a dilemma or an opportunity. Let's go for dilemma. It's more exciting than Nike launching another trainer. We have a dilemma. It's a lack of diverse leadership. Although our consumers are very diverse people, we still have mostly white males in our leadership team. Would that be a kind of dilemma they would come to Hyper Island with, and then you would facilitate a workshop to get to a solution that they can move forward with?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of our work would be, say, Adidas came to us.
Ooh.
Sorry, respects and clients. I used to work a lot with Nike in the past, so nothing against Nike.
Fine.
Or Wyden, nothing at all. any client comes to us with that kind of challenge, then I think there's probably two or three ways we might address it. We might turn that into a little design sprint to help them to think around how they want to come up with those solutions. We might run a program with their leadership team. We're running programs with leadership teams now around diversity, inclusion, belonging, mattering, all those kind of subjects, so that they can help the team that's already in place. But we'll also try and help them to think around how do they actually work differently. And I think that's a lot of trying to think about what we do is there tends to be a what and a how,
right,
about how we work, about how we think. And I think most of us, I know I was brought up in an education system where it was always the what.
Yeah.
What do you do? What do you learn? Facts, facts, facts. But you don't actually learn how you learn. And I think a lot of our work is helping teams, leaders, whatever it is, organizations, to try and think about how they do things.
Can you tell me a story of a moment in your career at Hyper Island that you've been quite, I guess, mostly proud, or a situation? You haven't got to tell me the brand if it's confidential, but has there been a moment in your, you know, last 20 years or so where you've gone, wow, that is the shit that I love. This is why I'm doing this thing.
Really interesting. I think different examples. I'd say one thing maybe is even an internal thing. You know, when the pandemic hit, we had a lot of courses that we ran probably in person. We used to run these sort of master classes where people would come in for 2 or 3 days and go on this sort of journey where we'd take them through a lot of different activities and tools. But getting an internal team ready and up and running so we could turn all of this into online remote courses pretty quickly, that was obviously huge sort of challenge. So, you know, kind of setting up a school, and then we managed to get like 1,000 students online in the first year. So that was, wow, that was a big challenge. And you know, but for me, that was about, it was about getting a team ready and helping that team to sort of go on that journey to set that up. So sort of being responsible for that was great. And also, yeah, just in a similar way, kind of seeing how we're developing the team here in North America, helping clients in different ways. In terms of anything specifically with clients, I think that the biggest thing are those kind of small things. Like, I'll give you an example. A client of ours that we've learned a lot with, worked a lot with, is Bayer, or Bayer. Mm-hmm. Don't know how you say it.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato. So like pharmaceuticals, obviously big company. It's like when you've worked with them over a period of time, and then you go back in and you sort of see things around the building. People are using your tools, your activities. And then, you know, you'll hear it back from someone else in the organization. Oh, we've got this great tool called the Stinky Fish. I'm like, oh, I wonder where you got that from. That's really nice when you kind of see that people have, and even when people hack your products,
yeah,
and your tools, and when you see that actually you've given something, someone, that they're able to apply, and it's helping them and their teams to develop. I think that to me is like the most rewarding thing.
Okay, I've got a really good measure. I'm hoping everyone that's listening has a good measure of, I guess, who you are, what you do, and the kind of companies that you served in your background. So I guess moving into who we are together, I guess.
Yep.
We're a strange little partnership, birthed out of frustration. I want to go back a little bit. So we met because my friend Ian and I were having a conversation in a pub somewhere, or I think, I don't want to say it, I'm going to have to say it, it was at a Soho house, I know, kind of wanky, but anyway, we're sitting there, having a few beers, and Ian and I were having this conversation where we said, there is a problem happening in the industry right now. We have a whole load of really talented people that aren't asking where they should go in the creative industry. They're asking, why should I stay? And why would I use my skills in strategy or creative or design to hang around and work for these businesses where I feel like I'm not valued, but to be honest, like, I don't really want to go into these businesses. Like, I'm sure there are more things and things I can do with my life than this current setup. So Ian and I got speaking, and we thought, ooh, what can we do? He told me that he was meeting somebody from Hyper Island, this wonderful business transformation business, I'm going to call it. He met a Paraguayan man, I believe, called Benny. Not Uruguayan, Paraguayan. And then Benny introduced us to you and said, right, let's do this together. We're going to call it Nobody Wants to Work for You, which is a nice name because it says what it says on the tin.
Absolutely.
And it will begin as a workshop. If we can fill a room full of people and get them to honestly describe why they are frustrated by ad land, design land, brand land, marketing, the creative industries as a whole. And if we can get them to own all of these problems and list them, then we can start to work out what would the agency of 2033 or the agency of the future look like? What won't it have? Who won't be working in it? Will it be using different tools to get further? And so we did. You've dived in. You flew to London, which isn't your home. Your home is Brazil. We ran a pilot session, and now we are the day after our session in New York, where not one, not two, but 29, I believe, people turned up.
Yeah.
Strangers in a room, and they were facilitated by you. That was the why we started. But when you heard about this, why did you want to get involved in Nobody Wants to Work for You?
Apart from just the opportunity to work with you,
Ollie. Oh, thank you so much.
I think there are numerous reasons. I think that the theme itself, it's something that's hugely relevant that we see every day at Hyper Island. I think there are a lot of people that, and it's not just the pandemic. I think it was happening pre-pandemic, but I think the pandemic accelerated it. I think there are a lot of people questioning the contract they have with work in itself. So I think we see it in creative industries, but we see it outside of creative industries. The connection to creative industries to me is really important because I think Hyper Island initially grew through agencies and through the creative industries, and we have a lot of courses and a lot of our consultancy work is aimed at these communities. Mm. I feel an affinity myself in being lucky that I kind of grew up. A lot of my initial working experience was working with agencies and with incredibly sort of talented creative people in London and globally, then moving to Brazil. So I see some of those frustrations. And I see it as a global issue. I mean, you know, living in Brazil, I'm incredibly lucky. I've got most amazing wife. She's super connected in the world of agencies and marketing in Brazil. And so talking to her and talking to our group of friends, I see it's totally relevant in Brazil. I think a lot of people are looking to redefine the job. And I think it's a job where for most people, it's not a job. It's a passion. It's, you know, it's a lifestyle. It's, mm. it's much more than just a job. So it's very frustrating when you see people that feel almost kind of trapped and wishing to do things better. I think that from a Hyper Island perspective, we like to help people try and find solutions. Mm. So I think that's why the session yesterday for me was a lot of fun, because we have people actually starting to imagine that future, and something I'm personally very interested in is helping people think around futures and future thinking. Finally, I just think what attracted me to try and, you know, want to work on this with you around a theme is I think that a lot of the time in our own working days, we work on things that other people ask us to work on. And I like the fact that so far, it's kind of us defining this as we go along. And I think we have enough of that belief. We'll get somewhere. It will make sense. But actually not knowing exactly where it is that we think we should be going to, mm. for me, is one of the riches of doing something like this, investing some time in something which allows us to be creative, but not feeling like there's external pressure telling us, well, we have to get from A to B in a certain amount of time. It's like we're exploring the space at this moment, and we're lucky that there's a lot of incredibly intelligent, creative people that would like to explore that space with us.
Mm. I want to talk about the session and how you put it together. So for context, it was a room of, 30 odd people. Some of them are designers, some of them are creative, some of them are strategists, some of them are CEOs, managing directors, leaders, doers, right? How did you approach, yesterday I thought went really well. I think we actually have ideas, solutions about what the future is going to look like, which was, we wanted it to be that and obviously those things, but the way that the day flowed was lovely. How did you choose and how did you decide to set up the way that that flowed and what did you put in place?
I think we talk a lot at HyperIron about sort of process design and process facilitation. So whenever we're setting anything up, it's where do we want to get to? What's the why? And then based on that why, how do we hopefully give people enough, the minimum of instructions to let them then create the chaos from which hopefully creativity comes and ideas come from. So I guess my role within that is designing that, and that hopefully comes from a lot of experience of trying to do this, making mistakes and changing. And I think one of the other things we adapted what we did in London a few months ago, I think one of the things we saw there was we started out maybe with people going into more of that problem space and thinking about some of the things that they're not happy with about the current relationship. And what I liked about yesterday, we started off with that kind of, where do we want to get to? What's the sort of the ideal that we're working towards? So we don't lose that.
Mm.
We don't lose that kind of dream of what the ideal agency or working relationship is going to be in the future.
I love that. There were so many, because people had these big sheets of paper and they were writing, just some people drew an umbrella and they kind of under the umbrella, what do we want to have in an agency and why do we get involved in this? But the themes were quite consistent, right? People were saying, I want to build something with people. I want to be surrounded by newness. I want to be able to see new things and do new things with my colleagues and friends. The vibe, I want to be surrounded by people that are good, interesting people.
Yeah.
And it was... The things that we feel that I think the industry has lost, you could see there was this yearning for that.
Yeah, and I think that the one thing that came up from the start and it continued all the way through, one of the key things that we kept hearing was just fun.
Mm.
How do we bring some fun back into the workplace and into the work experience? And how do we, like a bit of joy and just this feeling that we can enjoy ourselves? And I think it's totally natural. We've been through 2 or 3 years where, for multiple reasons, it's maybe been hard to feel like we can have fun.
Yeah.
We can justify our working relationship through having fun. But at the same time, we know, and there's a whole lot of research that shows that if you are enjoying yourself, if you feel like you're playing more than you're working, you learn a lot more.
Yeah.
And you can grow a lot more. And all those kind of theories of flow and of how people learn, you kind of need that. And I think maybe we need to stop and as an industry, kind of anyone who's working anything creative, you need to kind of recapture a little bit of that.
Mm.
And I certainly got that sense that whether it's financial pressure, whether it's the new dynamics of the workspace, I think one of the key things that we have to think about, how do we bring back into that for people is it's just that fun. And that comes from that human connection. That comes from just, and that's why I said to you, being able to work on a project where I don't feel as though I need to know what the outcome is, is part of that as well for me.
It definitely felt like the clear theme of yesterday. It was that life has changed irreversibly. We will not be going back to 5 days a week in the office. We should start to consider work-life balances aggressively now and curiously, because not only is it a nice thing and well-being at work is an important thing, it's actually essential for your survival now. And I think that's what I liked about yesterday, is we're not talking about nice to haves, we're talking about need to haves, really, for agencies, brands and businesses that are looking to attract good talent, and otherwise they will lose them. We had quite a few mothers in there yesterday speaking about the non-negotiables for them.
Absolutely.
And funnily enough, one of the themes that I heard from a lot of mothers was the yearning to connect physically with people. I think people put this plaster on return to work parents in particular, saying, oh, they all want to work remotely to suit their lifestyle. And that's such a blanket approach to a problem.
Yeah.
The problem is actually they want flexibility, but they still want and need the same physical satiation and collaboration with human beings to do their job well.
Yeah.
So I think it was a lovely space to help everybody explore those situations. I loved it when you split everybody out into teams of five, and those teams of five, I think, felt like there was less pressure to say something smart for the rest of the room. And so you had these very nice kind of protected conversations where people could say what they really felt. Funnily enough, I think my group in particular was a little bit quieter, and I was speaking a lot, and I was like, oh shit, I'm speaking too much. And I went quiet, and suddenly these amazing points about, because I said to everyone, oh yeah, we all want to be getting back into the office. And they were like, no, not the office, just a space. You know, it doesn't have to be a place where everyone turns up to 9 to 5. It's just a moment in a week where we all come together. I was like, oh shit, that's a really good point.
Yeah. And I think, just kind of building on that quickly, I think one of the things for me yesterday was, and it came up at different points, was just this need to, I think that the pandemic, it was one of those rare moments in time where you do question things, you get out of old habits, you start to think about what new habits may be being formed. I think a lot of what I'm seeing in those conversations is around new thresholds. Do we want to cross that threshold and create something new? Or are we going to go back from that threshold that we've just seen about transgressing? Mm. I thought some of the conversations from the women in the room were amazing around, you know, life stages.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I think we as men, two men here talking, we need to be lucky that women are ahead of us normally in most things. And so they're quite happy to talk about that. That's an issue for men as well, men's life stages.
Yeah.
But when they started to talk about that, you know, how is the menopause treated in the workplace? I feel as a man privileged that women are taking up that issue.
Mm.
And we need to take it up as men as well. We need to kind of like think around that and support women in leading those conversations. But I think it's relevant to all of us, you know, going through different life stages as one thing. Do we want to be in the office or not in an office? And what you just mentioned there about working in those small teams, I mean, that's how we tend to work in Hyper Island. But it can feel like a very small thing, but to me it's a very big thing, because traditionally meetings are kind of an hour, 2 hours, 20 people in a room. Most people are excluded from actually contributing. Very little comes out of it. So I would much rather work with 3-minute sprints, 5 people, change, go and do something else. And I think that that in itself can almost be transgressive. That can also be almost be like a rethinking the way we actually work. And I keep coming back to maybe this point of technology is one of those fundamental drivers of change. But if we're just going to keep working in the same way as we were in factories 100 years ago, then it's kind of crazy. It's like there's all these new potentials for us to do it. But what I liked in the room is almost you could see that change is driven more by individuals and people, and especially these kind of creative people are thinking and wanting to do it originally. Organizations will always be a little bit behind and have to do that catching up. And if you look at society, then maybe politicians and laws are probably quite a lot further back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of looking at how that change passes through different networks in society in different ways. And that's, to me, one of the joys of being in a room with people like that, because they're at that threshold and they're at the forefront and they're already thinking about how do I drive that change.
Yeah.
And that's what I would like. Maybe nobody wants to work for you is maybe an opportunity just to encourage people to feel that they're not alone in that. And if we can support people on that journey, then, you know, that to me would be an amazing thing to try and do.
It's exactly how I felt yesterday. It was almost the childish, abundant imagination that we saw. And, you know, people were suddenly being told, imagine an agency exists in 2033. What does it look like? What does it have? And people were like, oh, you know, they almost
got... Can I say that?
Yeah. Can I say that? Do we need that? And, you know, people spoke about AI, but not... They weren't speaking about AI to sound smart or to sound progressive thinking.
Yeah.
They were thinking about it as a solution. They were going, right, okay, what do we actually fucking need this AI thing for? Yeah. How can that then elevate what we all came here to do, which was collaborate and make creative things?
Yeah.
And there wasn't a fear-based conversation around it. It was a thoughtful, solution-based conversation.
And maybe, I don't know, like if you're seeing this as well, I just wonder whether, again, maybe it's an effect of the pandemic, but it almost requires us to be a little bit more humble and a little bit more courageous to actually ask those questions of technology and not feel that we have something to fear from it, but almost, I mean, being humble as human beings and say maybe technology, maybe AI can do some things better than we could do as human beings. And so how can we work together?
Yeah.
And get the best out of it rather than looking at it from a fear perspective or looking at it, you know, feeling threatened by it.
Mm. Did anything surprise you yesterday?
Not a surprise, but it was good to hear it. And I think it will come up increasingly and it will have different kind of inflections based on where we are in the world. But a couple of people who are immigrants into the US talking about how that influences their own perspectives and how they see themselves as maybe having a level of responsibility for creating this workplace of the future. So how can a young, creative Mexican who's, you know, starting to progress in their career start to help other young Latinos that are coming into the industry? Thought that was really interesting, just starting to hear how, people looking at this from different, diverse individual perspectives, thinking around. And that group was amazing because of this. They're starting to think about maybe their legacy, maybe their own sort of their role in creating a better future for other people. And that was, to me, looking at that group yesterday, that was one of the really nice things to see, that it wasn't a selfish perspective. Most of the time it was about, what have I learned that I'd like other people to maybe benefit from, and what could I change to make it better for the next generation coming in?
Why do you think people turned up yesterday?
Good question. Because they like you, because they know you. Because you were good at selling the session. I think there's a genuine desire to explore these issues. I think that, like I said, I see it in Sao Paulo, London, wherever we are, Miami, New York. I think that there are some common themes that people maybe would like to have a space to be able to explore them and explore it with other people. And I think, again, you know, come back to coming out of the pandemic, a bit of networking, a bit of getting out there and seeing who else is sort of out there in terms of my industry. What are they thinking? What are they doing? Maybe, you know, we're all sort of stuck in bubbles for a bit of time. And I think people want to get out and spend some time with interesting people that, you know, they can learn stuff together with.
Yeah. It's the biggest thing when I was kind of processing everything last night, one of the smallest things that I want to do is now just have that sense of belonging, a place, a regular place, space for physical discussion that might end up having a few beers afterwards and whatever. I feel like that was what everyone spoke a lot about yesterday. Yeah. Is why can't we do this? Why is this, you know, we had to stumble across this and find this ourselves. There should be a place where we can rely on intelligent conversation, you know, possibility to be vulnerable and collaborative at the same time. Did you notice any fear yesterday, or did you pick up any themes of kind of people being worried about the future?
I think that there are, in some ways, an underlying sense of, I don't know if it's fear, I think it's uncertainty. And I think that people can go in different directions around that. I think, you know, some people thrive on that. Some people see that as an opportunity. But I would think, obviously, there are people that uncertainty, you know, makes them uncomfortable. They're not always sure whether they're empowered to feel that they can make that change and have agency in changing things in their own futures. So I think it would be... it would be unnatural for people to be exploring futures and not having a certain sense of concern, or maybe the extremist fear. But on the other hand, it's almost, you know, again, there's a lot of research that shows the more you spend time undertaking the kind of activity that we did yesterday, these kind of intermittent sort of future temporary explorations, you start to create that new kind of neural pathways that means that you're more ready for the future when it comes.
Yeah.
So I kind of like running these activities of just throwing people into a future, because actually that's a good way of preparing yourself for almost whatever future comes at you. If you've already had that training and you've got that muscle that you're working on, I think it helps you to overcome it.
I like that. Speaking of future, oh, what a seamless segue. Kat, and this is a real test of, I feel bad asking this question because you were facilitating the whole thing, which means it's not always easy to hear everything that's going on at once. But if you were to make some predictions out of hearing a lot of the conversation yesterday, what do you think? Because obviously one of the questions was agency in 2033, what does it have? What does it possess? What is different about an agency today? If you were to make some bets on the creative agency of 2033, what do you think it will have that will be different to now?
I think that a lot of the conversations that came up around the business model itself and just breaking down some of those silos of teams, but also between agencies, I think some of the opportunities maybe, and we talk a lot at Hyper Island about this kind of idea of Velcro teams. So it's kind of like my own son does when he's playing Fortnite. It's kind of, you have to get together in a squad pretty quickly, get to know each other, work on resolving a complex problem, and then ciao. You go to the next group. Maybe in one group you're a leader, in another group you're learning from everyone else. And I think that kind of model of working will start to become more apparent. I think that, especially if clients actually start to demand that more, it's kind of... I don't know if it's going to be a complete sort of a almost like a I don't know, like an Uberization where you've got sort of gig workers everywhere and you'll kind of just select those teams that are going to work for you. But I think there will be shifts in that direction. Obviously, hopefully, some of those shifts in terms of diversity, in terms of just... And again, you know, it was brought up yesterday, but it's if you're working on resolving problems, you need every level of diversity in a team to be able to look at a problem from as many different angles and then come out of it with as many possible solutions from different angles.
Yeah.
So I think that's naturally, not naturally, it has to happen. I think it's something that, you know, it just agencies and clients just have to keep, you know, banging that drum. And I get kind of tired when I hear people saying, oh yeah, but we've thought about that, we've tried that, and maybe this diversity thing isn't working. It's like, well, go and tell that to the hundreds of black trans women that were murdered in Brazil and probably all around the world last year, this year, every day, when you think you've done your diversity piece, because you've never done it. So I think those things just have to keep happening.
It's funny, mentioning the thing just before then, you were speaking about people working in these little crack teams. I've got quite a few quotes from yesterday. Okay. I'm going to read some out because I think they capture the conversation that was happening. But here's one. It says, it's not just about white claws and avocados. It's about having a really cool space we can actually get together and collaborate. That's exactly what you were just saying right now about sort of teams rather than just forcing everyone to come back in and luring them in with white claws and avocados.
Yeah, yeah.
What is the purpose of us coming together? The reason we're coming together is we want to collaborate, not eat green vegetables and fruits and drink hard seltzers, which I quite like.
And I think, Ollie, I think that goes back into that point around, if you're just going to ask everyone to come back in and you're still going to run your meetings in the same way, and the actual... I just mentioned gaming there, but fundamentally when my kids move into the world of work, they're almost probably going to ask that question, can I stay at home and game all day or should I go to work? Like, how do we turn the workplace experience into one where those things you get from being a gamer, of learning quickly, of meeting new people, of challenging yourself, of feeling that what you do has some sense of reward to it, if we can't give that to young people in the workplace, then I think there's a real risk that we kind of alienate a lot of young people.
Yeah. It's funny. There's quite a few of these little quotes. I like the idea of the game. How do you gamify work and how do you relate? Because there's a field of dopamine that these kids are clearly getting from these games. Yeah. And there's a way that you can just build that into the workplace. You recognize like nothing really changes. You still want to keep on playing games and getting the kind of the feedback that you get from these things. It's just that we've forgotten how to keep it fun. Again, it's going back to that fun thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at things like agile methodologies, you know, maybe it's not an accident that in Fortnite you create squads. Mm. And so maybe some of that sort of mindset way of thinking is already starting to move into organizations. But I just think creating enough of those moments in people's working days when they can actually come together, work collaboratively, be creative, feel empowered to make decisions, and to work on those kind of smaller projects and to work on projects where you can actually follow something through, see the implications of it. I feel that a lot of organizations that we work with, this Hyper Island, they want to explore it, they talk about it, but actually really bringing that into the day-to-day, maybe that brings up other bigger challenges as well, you know. Yeah. Are your shareholders happy for you to start shifting in that direction? Do we all want to break down the walls of capitalism tomorrow? but I think that if we're not even having those conversations, we do risk, like I said, almost alienating a lot of young people in terms of what's the work relationship they're going to develop for themselves.
Yeah. Look, I realize you're a busy man. You're running off to solve some huge conglomerate business's problems in about T-minus 3 minutes. So
I'm trying to work out how to navigate the New York Metro.
Oh, fine. Okay, cool. That's a big issue right there.
Before I then go and try.
Right. Okay, good. That's not the workshop.
Imagine that I could ever resolve some huge conglomerate's business issues, but I'll try.
Before you do that, I guess I wanted to leave on a note of hope.
Yeah. Always.
As it's important, reasons to be cheerful. Next up, obviously you and I need to have a conversation about where we're taking this, but there's definitely a feeling, I think, that we want to do this again, hopefully on a bigger scale.
Absolutely.
What would you say to anybody that is considering coming to one of our little Nobody Wants to Work for You workshops, and why should they think about coming along?
I would say, please come along, be yourself. I hope that we can create a space in which you feel safe to share your own experiences, and hopefully, I think that working with other people, and we spoke about this yesterday, creating this network, that's the way you create a movement. And I think trying to find other people that, it may be one person, it may be a huge group of people working together, but it's just finding those people that, you know, hopefully can make you realize you're not alone, that there are other people that are interested in exploring these themes, in making the workplace a much better experience for all of us. And in doing that, you know, getting a little bit bigger in terms of our hopes, you know, changing society. I think that there are huge issues that we face culturally, socially, politically. But a lot of that, you know, most of us spend most of our time in the workspace. So maybe bringing some of those issues in and addressing some of them is a starting point. But the other thing is, we've said it again, hopefully it's fun. I mean, I think we had a fun experience yesterday.
I agree.
There was a lot of noise. There was a lot of energy. I got a couple of emails from people that were there yesterday just saying, I just like the energy and the fun and just meeting people that I hadn't met before and just, you know, being able to participate in that was just a really fun morning.
Tim, I want to say thank you so much. You've got to run off.
Thank you.
You are incredible. I cannot wait to do this with you again. And au revoir.
Let's make it happen.